Hey, this is the Rebel Room back with you. Happy 2020. And Ray Brewer, Las Vegas Sun, alongside Mike Romala. Mike, the Rebels are undefeated in the new decade, in the new year. UNLV basketball with the shocker last weekend. They upset Utah State, not only upset them, double digit, thoroughly hammered the defending Mountain West champions, and then a nice victory against Air Force in their last outing. Combine that with the victory against Fresno State in 2019, UNLV 8-8 on the year, 3-0 in league play. Gramal, I was duped on Twitter, believe it or not, where somebody said that the Utah State win was the Rebels' best win of the decade. And this was January 1st. And I'm like, gosh, why are these people overreacting? I can name 1,000 games that were better than this. And then I'm like, oh, that was the first game of the decade.
It was that neat. The Air Force game, they played very well in both of those games. Obviously, that Utah State game kind of came out of nowhere, just how ferocious they were with the on defense. It's, if you ask anyone, you know, the coaches to the players, they're very on message. Like, the answer to everything right now is like, hey, how are you winning? What worked well for you in that game? And whatever you ask, the answer is always, we're just playing really hard. Like, that's what they're focusing on. So, that seems to be working for them for now. Like, this was a team that 3 weeks ago was 4-8, lost at home to Pacific in embarrassing fashion. And it was pretty much, I thought it was going to be a lost season. I thought there was pretty, we were, you know, pretty much done. You're sort of building for next year. And then boom, they just flip the switch. And all of a sudden you win 4 in a row, you're 3-0 in league play. You kind of get something going here.
Yeah. I mean, obviously nobody overreacts more than I do. And I was an unhappy 4-8 too, because, you know, this, he was making a point where he had said, hey, listen, I'm okay losing games this year to set the tone for the program, where we're going to be, you know, if a ball falls off the ball rack, it's going to be a race to see who lands on it first. And the first five people that land on this ball are going to play. And you're putting in Trail Hurlburt, who I love, great kid, but you're putting him in the 5 minutes into the game. And I'm like, listen, can we try to win? Can we put the best five Jimmys and Joes out there and see what happens? And for them to beat Utah State, now granted, Utah State might have overlooked UNLV, or Utah State had a bad day, or Utah State had the Vegas flu, to borrow a hockey term. Whatever it may be, UNLV got a big win, and you have to be feeling better about TJ Otzelberger. Because I was starting to doubt the guy 12 games in. You know how we are here.
Yeah, people were. You were starting to see it on social media, too, from some of the fans. Like, hey, did we make the right hire here? Like, what's going on? We shouldn't be this bad. But it's definitely swung in the other direction these four games. Not just that they've won, but that they've won it on his terms. Like you said, he drew a very hard line in the sand. Like, if we need to dive for loose balls and we need to play hard, and the guys that play defense and practice hard are the guys who are going to play. And he didn't really relent on that. Like, he stuck with it. Like, those guys are still playing, those try-hard guys, and they're winning that way. So, I mean, that's a great validation for TJ Otzelberger and the way he's going to play. Like you saw against in the most recent game against Air Force, Donnie Tillman showed up late to the shoot-around on the day of the game, and they benched him. They didn't play him, and they still won by double digits. So it's like, this is all great for TJ Otzelberger, who can show these players now, hey, like, if we play this way, we can win. Now, you can either be a part of that and buy in and dive on for loose balls and you can play defense, or you can show up late and you don't play and we're still going to win. So he's really got a lot going for him right now, just based on these last 2 weeks. It's been from where they were to where they are now. It's a very big turnaround.
So how does the 3-0 start to league play, or the winning streak, change the expectation for the season because I think going in it was, this is going to be a Pelo year, a bridge gap type of thing, as we wait for, you know, some dead weight to get out of the program, if you will, and for some people to become eligible, and, you know, the TJ team we won't see until year two. Now all of a sudden they're 3-0 in league, and Utah State's got two losses in the league, and people are thinking, okay, well, we got live action here. Does that change the narrative?
After they beat Utah State, so like immediately after they won, like minutes after they beat Utah State, someone tweeted at me and was like, is UNLV going to start 6-0 in league play? And I looked at the schedule, and they beat Air Force. They're 3-0. They go to Boise State this week on Wednesday. You win that game, you're 4-0, and your next two games are at Wyoming and hosting San Jose State. So, I mean, like, if you beat Boise State, you're going to be 6-0 in the Mountain West. And if you lose to Boise State, you're probably still going to be 5-1. I don't think anybody really thought that that was going to be the case, but, I mean, the expectations have already, you seem taking a big jump up. If you start out 5-1 or 6-0, then, yeah, obviously you're one of the better teams in the league, and that raises your expectation level to, if you're 6-0 or you're 5-1, you've got to win double-digit games in the Mountain West to finish it off. You're going to be a top three seed, probably, top four at the worst. And if you're up, if you finish up there, you've got legitimate hopes of winning the conference tournament. Now, obviously, that's 15 games away. That's 2 months away. There's a lot that's going to happen between now and then. But if you start 6-0 or you start 5-1, that's a team that most people will feel can win the Mountain West. So that those are going to be the reset expectation baseline.
Yeah, and so you look at the team and the way they play, and I don't necessarily think they're playing the way TJ Otzelberger envisions it looking. You know, running up the court, ball movement, hitting some threes. But to his credit, and I really mean this.
A great credit.
He's found a way. It's like, these are my five guys. Marvin Coleman, DeJong, Hardy. And I'm going to find a way to win with them. And I think they're doing a great job of using the inside-out game, right? They're getting the ball down low. They're running when needed to run. And Bryce Hamilton is starting to play like a four-star. He's the guy we thought he should be. He's playing with confidence. He's not afraid to get pulled out of the lineup like he was last year.
Mountain West Player of the Week this week.
Mountain West Player of the Week. And now it's like, okay, you look at how it's going to look next year, and Bryce Hamilton's really solid in that lineup. Granted, a lot of things could happen. Kids move all the time. But Bryce Hamilton has been great.
The most impressive thing, and again, I am getting ahead of myself saying, like, talking in big picture terms, but in the big picture, when TJ Otzelberger was hired and out throughout that first offseason, it was all, we're going to run, we're going to push the pace, we're going to play wide open, we're going to shoot the three, we're going to be an exciting offensive team, we're going to get the ball across half court in two dribbles or less, we're going to get in the scoring zone in 3 seconds or less, and it was all, you know, offense and excitement and up and down. And then he got under the hood and, you know, it was a few games in and you start to realize, like, the talent you have on the team, you're not really playing to these kids' strengths by playing that kind of game because they don't really have the kind of offensive talents that it takes to run that system. So for TJ Otzelberger to sort of stop on a dime and go from up and down, open offense to immediately, we're not that team. We're going to be a defense and rebounding team. We're going to be a hustle team. We're going to be a diving on the floor, walk-on team. And have success that way. To me, that's a great credit to his coaching ability. I know it's not what people expected, but the ability to adapt to your personnel like that on the fly and position your team to have a good year in the Mountain West, I mean, that's what more can you want from a coach? I think he's been excellent in the first year.
Yeah, X's and O's, he's definitely doing the trick. And now you got to look at the lineup. Donnie Tillman's been suspended twice.
He's had three disciplinary instances. The first two times he was late for something, they pulled him from the starting lineup, but he did play in those games. And the most recent time against Air Force, he was late to the shoot around on the day of the game, and they benched him for the entire game. So the discipline is getting, you know, more severe as it goes along, and you kind of wonder, like, how long is this going to go on? Like, at what point does he shape up or ship out?
Yeah, and this is where you get in the real odd spot, is now all of a sudden you're 3-0, you won without the guy, but you need some bodies to finish this out, and having him, if when he's there, he's a good guy, which we assume he is, he just can't show up, is having him there going to help you out because you just need a body to play out the season. And I think it's more than just developing the players on the roster and setting the table for next year. There's some excitement now. You might get a few people to show up at the games, which they're desperately missing.
If you start the Mountain West 5-1, and then a couple months from now you're, you know, 12-4 or something, and you're like battling for second or third place, and this is a team that you is surprising and coming out of nowhere, and you can win. Like, Donnie Tillman could be the difference between making it to the tournament, the league tournament championship game, or not. Like, he's a good enough player. He can make a difference if he buys in and he's bringing it every night. Like, he could give you 30 good minutes every night. He's got the talent. you may be able to scrape by against Air Force without him, but you're going to want him at some point. So, I mean, the best thing for everyone involved is if, you know, that was the last incident and he just flies right the rest of the way and he's on time for everything and he buys in and he plays hard. It didn't seem like as such a huge issue when it looked like it was a lost season. But now that it looks like they got a chance to maybe do something, you don't want one player to run you off course like
Absolutely. And, I mean, listen, I think
– and the vibes are so good around the team right now. Like, in practice, post-game, like, everybody's happy. Everybody's upbeat. You can tell they think they've got something going. If they have one guy who's sort of not pulling the rope, that's it's going to become an issue unless he takes care of it.
Yeah, I just – you know, playing devil's advocate, I just don't know how long Marvin Coleman, who I love – you know that.
I know it.
Vitaly Scheibel. If you're relying on those guys to play major minutes, you know, it's tough. Nick Blair to a certain
They're going to turn into pumpkins at some point.
Exactly. That's a good analogy, Grimala. That's great. You get that Cinderella if you're listening.
No, and it's a serious, like, that is an issue you have to deal with. Like, Marvin Coleman is playing great, but is he going to give you, you know, 10 rebounds and 6 assists every night like he did against Air Force? Probably not. There's going to be some games where, you know, he's not going to do as much, or Vitaly Scheibel is going to – he made a 3 against Air Force. It's going to be a night where he misses those shots. And those are they're probably not the most consistent players that you want to rely on every single night, whereas Tillman has the talent to be that guy. So, yeah, you want him in there to help, you know, shore up the rotation for sure. But Coleman – is going to play, I think, no matter what, just because they love his energy and the leadership. He's quickly become – he's the leader of the team. Like, he's the number one guy. He's the top dog in terms of leadership. They follow his lead. They play with his energy. Like, he's the guy. So, I mean, he's going to play no matter what.
Is DeJong the best post player in the league?
I haven't seen everyone yet. Kata is probably still the most talented. Like, he's the best. He hasn't played really yet this year, just a couple minutes here and there. San Diego State's got a pretty good big man. But, I mean, he might be right up there. It's a real breakout for him, for John.
The one thing to TJ's credit is you see tangible proof of players getting better.
I would say so. John is better. Hardy is better.
Hardy's a better team player.
Yes.
Hamilton is lights out better. Or he may be the same kid. He just has confidence. And it's definitely interesting. San Diego State ranked 6th today, Grimala, in the AP poll. They're obviously the team to beat. They beat Utah State on Saturday, I believe it was. And the Rebels will eventually get the Aztecs.
I was just looking up the schedule.
But I don't think it's until the end of the month, the first meeting. Yeah, it's January 26th. It's a Sunday at home. So, I would think that it should be everybody at the arena, right?
I would think you get a pretty good crowd for that game, especially if the, you know, your opponent's ranked in the top 10 and it's, you know, one of your biggest rivals. If you're, you know, what, 5-1? Let's see. Let me run through the schedule real quick. If you're 6-2 at that point in the league, and San Diego State is 8-0, and there's a good chance you're like the number 1 and number 2 teams in the league at the midway point, that's a pretty big game, right?
And that game on CBS College Sports, yeah, absolutely. And that's coming off a Reno game because you're in Reno that week. So that's a big week. Whew, coming down the hatchet. Quickly shifting gears, new football coach, Marcus Arroyo. Say the last name.
Arroyo.
Jeez Louise. I was talking to Carla, my wife, about it. She's like, you might want to get the guy's last name right.
Arroyo.
Arroyo. What?
You're pronouncing the Y as an R.
Arroyo. I had speech problems when I was a kid. Don't make fun of me, all right?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, the name, can you say the name Roy?
Roy.
Arroyo.
Marcus Arroyo.
Yeah.
Anyways, he was at the game on Saturday. It was nice. There was two people there to clap for him, which was nice. And all systems are a go.
He's trying to get his staff in place. They hit a snag with the offensive coordinator, decided to stay with Oklahoma State, where they promoted him to OC. We'll see what he brings in for his staff. Defensive coordinator is probably more important just because the offense is going to be Arroyo's, like he said as much at his press conference. Like, he's going to design the playbook, call the plays. Like, it's his offense. He's pretty much the OC. And his, you know, the whoever has the offensive coordinator title is basically there to, you know, facilitate, run the practice, coach the offense, but it's going to be a Royals offense. So defensive coordinator is probably more important.
Yeah, they've offered a few scholarships over the weekend, a three-star running back from Indiana, an offensive lineman from California. The running back's interesting. He's got offers from some MAC schools. The lineman has got his offers were mostly Idaho, Idaho State, maybe Portland State. And I saw one commenter on Twitter a little worried that that's the kind of caliber of player UNLV is going after. And, of course, 80% of the scholarship kids who are available have already signed. So we can't really judge the type of player he's going after or the type of recruit he wants this year. It'd be next year's signing class. I think right now you're just kind of trying to fill out your class.
Yeah, and he is an ace recruiter, according to, you know, by reputation and by resume. That should be one of his key strengths, that he should bring in better players than any coach before him at UNLV, especially with all the, you know, the new facilities and all that stuff. So I wouldn't worry about the recruiting this year. I think next year you'll probably get a better class, or at least for the guys who want, you know, the star ratings, the fans who want to see star ratings on their players, you'll see more of those guys probably next year.
Yeah, of course, 24/7 still lifts UNLV with the same commits that committed under the last coaching staff, for whatever that's worth.
Have you heard any word from local high school coaches or players on Arroyo's? No?
Nothing.
Because, like, I know when T.J. Otzelberger was hired, like, within that first week, he had other coaches and local guys saying, like, oh, he's been to practice, he's called this kid, he's had this kid in for a meeting. Like, he hit the ground running. It's different with Arroyo because he had to coach that Rose Bowl game, so he wasn't in town. Whereas Otzelberger basically got the job, and then the next day had, like, Julian Strother and Noah Tates and all those guys, like, into his office to talk to him. So it's not quite the same, but... Yeah, I guess Arroyo really hasn't hit the ground
yet. That early signing day for college football kind of has been a blessing, because if you're out in front of a guy early, you could kind of wrap him up. Like, the Johnny Johnson is the perfect example. The kid has been great at Oregon the last 2 or 3 years, and he was all signed, sealed, and delivered to go to UNLV. But in, you know, late January, Oregon had a few wideouts go to other schools, and he popped up on their board, and they took him from UNLV. But if you're a first-year coach, it's kind of tough to get the recruiting weekend set up in, you know, a day or two. And then when you have to coach in a Rose Bowl game during a dead period, it's just – it's kind of a waste of time. And that's why if I were him – and maybe your strategy is – I didn't think Tony Sanchez was an awful recruiter. I thought he got a lot of good kids. And these kids that are out there, there's some three stars. Might be worth trying to hang on to a few of these kids who want to come to UNLV simply so you have some guys.
It's hard to say because Arroyo hasn't really laid out a recruiting plan or anything like that yet, but – he may just not want to get caught in the same trap that different sport, but Marvin Menzies did when he got here his first year, and he offered scholarships to a bunch of guys who probably weren't, you know, the type of player he wanted, and then they were on scholarship for 4 years. Your Slavonchinans and types like that, who all of a sudden, like, now your scholarship is clogged up for 4 years and probably shouldn't have offered it in the first place, but you needed a body. So maybe Arroyo just doesn't want, unless he's absolutely certain, he may not want to hand out scholarships to players who – you know, he's going to be looking to get rid of a year from now.
So sign 7 or 8 kids, and then throughout the course, you know, in 2 years.
You might rather leave those spots open than just take a guy to take a guy.
Yeah, and then in a few years, maybe supplement with some JC kids to balance that class out.
It's possible. I don't know. I don't know what his plan is and how he feels about the junior college and in that route, but it's something to look at.
All righty. Well, this is the Rebel Room, UNLV at Boise. Wednesday, Grimal will be there.
And at Wyoming on Saturday.
Grimal will be there. For Ray, I'm Ray. I just said for myself. For Mike, I'm Ray, and our technical advisor today, Clayton Kiefer. Thank you, Clayton.